This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moscawain. Last month, we aired a segment about solar energy, and we talked mostly about the policy end of things, but a lot of people called and wrote with more practical questions. So that's the focus for today's program. What do you want to know about solar energy, and especially about installing solar panels on your home? We want to take calls and emails and tweets this hour for our panel of experts. The telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. Email is radiotimes@whyy.org, or you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And now let's introduce our panel. First, we have John Farrell. John Farrell is the director of Democratic Energy at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. And John Farrell, welcome to Radio Times.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Lee Kasheshian is the regional vice president of East Coast Operations at Solar City. Lee Kasheshian, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And Jenny Heinzman is the training coordinator for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, Wisconsin. She's also a master electrician who began working with renewable energy systems in 2004. Jenny Heinzman, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. And I want to start with you. And let's just do a little primer here on how solar panels work. And this could be a little bit of a challenge on the radio because I don't want to get down in the science weeds. But can you just describe to us as simply as possible how sunlight gets turned into electricity?
Sure. Sort of the my best attempt here at a 101 version is the little invisible particles in sunlight called photons are able to knock loose some electrons within what we call a photovoltaic or PV panel, which you're right is a little complicated in that it's called a semiconductor and you have to know a little bit about electricity. And ultimately, though, the flow of electrons is what creates electricity. And the energy from the sunlight is what knocks those electrons loose within those modules. And as long as we give it a path to flow, we can use those electrons and change them and invert them and bring them into your home.
I think you have a career in radio. That's awesome. That's a really good explanation. I appreciate that. And has that technology changed much over time?
No, absolutely not. The original PV cell was, you know, it's not, and that's probably what I think is the neatest part about this electricity. It's not new. It's not rocket science, so to speak. You know, half a volt per cell basically is what these little PV modules, these little cells can do. And when you connect a whole bunch of them into a series string, you can make those voltages add up. Just like when you put batteries into your flashlight, you know, if you put one battery and another battery in, those voltages add up and then ultimately give you something you can use. So you have all these tiny little half-volt cells that get connected together and within the module can give you like 24 volts or 48 volts, something more usable.
Lee Kasheshian, let's turn to you because one thing that has changed is the technology has become a lot cheaper and I think even more productive. And I think that's been a pretty big driver for the growth of your business, Solar City. I see your green trucks when I drive around on the roads. Has some of those changes been important to growing the business?
Gosh, well, I mean, certainly it has made a difference on the overall economics. You know, solar panel production, to get to Jenny's point, have, you know, essentially improved modestly, you know, year over year. You know, go back maybe 5-6 years ago to today, the production of one panel, which is approximately 3 by 5 feet, it maybe has gone from the capacity of 200 watts to 250 watts. So there is a leap there. But a big part has been with the scale of production of solar panels, that the overall cost of a panel has come down. Therefore, the price of that capacity has come down and allowed us to see a drop in the cost of the system.
And one of the things that I think your company tries to do is make solar simpler. Kind of describe to me what you mean by that.
Sure. You know, I think as the solar industry has evolved, you know, where folks who were interested in solar were, you know, shopping for panels, looking at various equipment, and basically making a purchase of a system that can be $25,000 to $50,000, depending upon the size of the system that you're able to build. You know, so there's lots of parts and pieces to understand. And there's obviously a financial cost associated with that, and many people that was something they just couldn't couldn't stomach or weren't able to finance. What SolarCity really did, which was develop a way of thinking about purchasing the power as opposed to purchasing the equipment. So when we install a system for the vast majority of our customers, you know, they're entering into agreement where they're buying the power that is produced off of a system at a kilowatt hour price, which is how you buy, you know, power from your local utility. And it is set against that price per kilowatt hour over the course of our contract, so that the average homeowner no longer really has to think about that upfront cost, and they don't have to necessarily think about the technical aspects of a panel and the inverters and other elements that go into a system. So it's allowed you know, a much broader group of people to become interested and decide to go solar at their own homes.
And John Farrell, let's turn to you. You're with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. And this, what Lee Kashashian was just talking about there kind of brings up this issue of how you're going to get those solar panels on your house, whether you're going to lease the system or you're going to buy the power, as he was just talking about there, or you just pony up the $10,000 to $20,000 or $30,000 it's going to cost to put them on their house. What do you think is the best way to do with that? Is there a choice that's sort of like the silver bullet choice in there?
There really isn't. You know, there's been a lot of research done on all sides of these things, and I think, you know, the best comparison I can offer is for folks who, you know, are familiar with going out to get a car, that, you know, a lot of people own a car and they finance it. And the reason they do that is it's very easy to do that. You know, you can get financing right there at the dealer. You can get it from your bank ahead of time. You know, we're very familiar with making that kind of purchase and making it easy. And I think what's happened in the solar sector is that you have a little bit more complexity than with a car. You have tax credits from the federal government. You might have incentives at the state level, and those help account for the environmental value that solar provides that we don't normally account for in our electricity bills. And kind of figuring all that out can be a little more complicated. And that's why, you know, the options like SolarCity, where you can, you know, lease the panels or buy the power from the panels rather than handle all the transaction yourself, are great for folks who want a little more simplicity. And for folks who are, you know, more interested in taking it on themselves and can get it, will get a, you know, they'll take on a little more risk and get the opportunity for a greater return. Ownership can work for them.
Yeah, and your title there at the Institute for Self-Reliance is Director of Democratic Energy. I don't think I've heard that title before. What does that mean?
It means that we see the opportunity in the energy system with technologies like solar, with, you know, smartphone apps and you know, automated systems to really put the power back into the hands of the people. We've spent decades essentially piling power into utility companies that are now very large, often monopolies that serve you know, a state or a region of a state. And we did that because the way that we delivered electricity for decades made that make sense. We had big power plants and big power lines delivering to big cities. And we're fundamentally changing the nature of the electricity system with technology. And our belief is that that should fundamentally change the rules of the electricity system as well.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later in the program. We're talking about solar energy and renewable energy and how do you put solar panels on your house. We received a question from Mike in Narberth, and he says, I'm looking to buy a house next year. How possible is it to install solar on a new home? And then he says, from my understanding, the main barrier is the initial cost involved in doing that. And then he wants to hear your thoughts. Let's turn to Jenny Heinzen first. Installing solar on a new house, is that any different than installing solar on an existing house?
You know, from the installation aspect, no. You first of all have to make sure you would have a good place to put these panels on the new house. And obviously a south-facing roof would be a perfect place to do such things. Or you could put like a pole mount or a ground mount system in the backyard or to the side of the house if you wanted to do that. So from the actual, you know, like wrenching and wiring standpoint, no, not a big deal at all. The only caution I would have is that, you know, a lot of times the size of the system that you would want to put on, a lot of times will be dictated by how much energy you use on an annual basis or on a monthly basis. You kind of look at your history and your bills and you say, okay, this is how much energy in kilowatt hours, you know, I use each month. This is what you pay for when you get your bill. And you kind of add those up throughout the year. And through that process, we can figure out, like, what size system would be best for you. In a new house, it might just be a little more difficult to kind of estimate that. But from an installation standpoint, absolutely can still be done, depending on, yeah.
Yeah, and Lee Kasheshian from Solar City, I assume that you talk to people like Mike from Narberth all the time, and it sounds like one of his big concerns is what the upfront cost would be. So I guess that's where all these different options for paying for it would come in.
Sure, sure. You know, just like what he's asking is a similar conversation that we have, you know, thousands of times every day for existing homeowners. I mean, Jenny is absolutely right. A lot of what happens is understanding, you know, what your consumption is and trying to design a system that lines up with that consumption. There are, however, some of the larger home builders nationwide that are seeing the value of solar and are starting to offer it as a standard offering in their new home communities. And in those cases, you know, they're doing energy modeling based upon, you know, the size, the square footage of the home, and coming up with some rules of thumb to try and assign a system size that can make sense. We are doing that, you know, across the country with a couple of the large home builders now. Not all are going that way, but I think as time goes on, there's a place for it, and we're going to see more of it. But for the person who may be building a custom home or building the home themselves, you know, certainly it's something that if they are involved with us at an earlier stage, there are some aesthetic things that we can do. You know, vent pipes, other obstructions that may be on the roof of the home that we ahead of time can help educate the designer, the architect, around to maximize the footprint of a system that would go on a rooftop. As she also points out, there are folks who just don't have that ability. They have trees. We've got a lot of beautiful trees in the Philadelphia area, and maybe they have a part of their property that's better suited for a ground mount system. And in that case, there's an opportunity for us to work with them on how we would design that and any connections, trenching, what have you, that would go to having those connections go from the house to the array.
Sure, sure. And our engineer, Kevin Griffin, had a question about if you want to install solar panels and you live like in the city, do you have to get special licenses and that sort of thing for that? Do you know anything about that, Lee Kasheshian?
Yeah, I mean, the process is
We just have about 30 seconds here, too, I should say.
Yeah, the process is dictated by whatever the permitting authorities are of that jurisdiction. For the most part, they are the same. In the city of Philadelphia, much of it's going to be restricted by structural integrity of a home. That's one of the things that we, you know, have to address with older historic homes.
Okay.
So it really will depend upon, you know, the house structure.
All right. We're talking about renewable energy and focusing a lot on solar, but we might dip into wind a little bit here, too. But solar is what most people are thinking about for their homes. If you have a question or a comment about our discussion, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Also, you can send an email to radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. We'll be back after a break. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady. We're talking about renewable energy and installing solar panels on your house, what's involved in that. We're taking questions. We have three people who know a lot about this on the line, and they're ready to take your questions and answer them. The telephone number is 1-888-477-9499, and we want to take a lot of questions and calls and emails this during this hour. I want to turn to John Farrell, Director of Democratic Energy at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, and you kind of touched on something earlier about democratizing energy. What's wrong with this system of that we've relied on and has served us very well for a long time of having big centralized power plants and big electrical grids that that get the power out to us so that when we just flip the switch, the light goes on? What's wrong with that?
You know, there's nothing wrong with that, just like there would be nothing wrong with us continuing to use typewriters instead of laptop computers or iPads or our smartphones, in the sense that the technology is there for the taking. We have this opportunity to do the electricity system in a different way that is going to be of remarkable benefit to electricity customers and to our society. You know, I just think about, for example, you know, right now, in the way that the utility has to manage how our electricity use is on the grid, we have what are called peak demand times, which means there's that time on a sunny afternoon in July when everybody's air conditioner is running. And that's all the power plants that are on the system are essentially built to serve the energy demand at that moment. And solar is one of the solutions that we have to that, because it's a way that on every little rooftop that we've got, we can provide power back into the grid at that time period. You know, ways like Nest thermostats and other things like that can completely automate the way that people can maybe turn off their air conditioner for on a 15-minute interval or cycle their refrigerator or something like that. All these really amazing opportunities that we have with the technology that's available to democratize control and generation of power on the electricity system.
We're taking phone calls this hour. The phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And Lee Kasheshian from Solar City, I think this next question is going to be from you. We're going to go to Linda in Downingtown. Linda, welcome to Radio Times. What's your question?
Oh, great. Thanks for taking my call. This is a very interesting conversation. I had a quick question. Kind of touches on what someone was talking about, licensing in Philadelphia. So in the state of Pennsylvania, for example, geothermal contractors are not required to be licensed in order to install a system.
Okay.
And I was curious, those systems are extremely expensive for the homeowner. So I was wondering, for solar paneling, if you are a contractor, do you have to be licensed to install solar paneling?
And Lee, do you know the answer to that question? If you install solar panels, do you have to be licensed in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, you know, Pennsylvania is different than many of the neighboring states in that the rules are different by township. If you're in the city of Philadelphia, Reading, some of the larger cities, they have a licensing process that's much more specific. In many of the townships, it varies. You know, all of our crews are carrying multiple licenses for multiple states. So, where there is not that licensing or that requirement level, we're already doing it because as a standard, we're having to adhere to a broad range of standards across the various states. But it is a good question. It's something that as we look across Pennsylvania, you know, we're trying to hold one level, which is a much higher level than maybe what some of the towns or municipalities are requiring.
Hmm. All right. And we received an email from Paul. And when you talk about this, some people can get really far down in the weeds. And I think Paul would like to get down in the weeds a little bit. So I'm going to bring Jenny Heinzen in. She is a master electrician. And I think you can help me answer this. He said that, you know, that electricity comes in and, you know, we have DC electricity and we have AC electricity and you need an inverter so that we can all use the electricity in our house. Maybe help describe what is an inverter and why that's important in a system like this.
Absolutely. It's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. He's absolutely right, Paul. The PV modules make direct current, DC, much like the battery in your car has a positive and a negative, so we have to make sure we really carefully watch how we connect our positives and negatives together. When you get a couple of modules connected together into what we call like a string, we fuse them, we protect them in little what we call combiner boxes, which are just like junction boxes, and we bring the main positive lead and the main negative lead, again, just like you would in a battery, into an inverter. And the inverter is where the magic sort of happens, and it changes the direct current into alternating current. It's the opposite of like what your phone charger does when you put it in the wall. Your phone charger is taking the alternating current from the outlet in the wall and changing it into the DC that can charge your cell phone or anything else that's to a battery. So that's really like the brain of the system, the inverter. And probably in the purposes of radio, we don't want to get into what actually happens magically inside of it.
No, I don't think we do. But I think what this does illustrate, I think, is that if you do this, you got to start thinking about things that most of us aren't accustomed to thinking about. We're used to just flipping on that switch, and you got to get a little more knowledge. And that's why we have these three experts on the telephone. Let's go back to the phones because we got a lot of folks calling in, and we're going to go to Bob in Broomall. Bob, you're on Radio Times, and I want to say first of all, I'm just going to set up your question with the idea that when we talk about new ways of getting energy and lighting our houses and heating our houses, it really gets the creative juices flowing. And so you've got an interesting question here.
Okay. Well, the real object of solar, of course, is to provide electric power. So if solar cells were of high efficiency and as easily installed as roofing shingles, then by using what I've done, this I've never heard in discussions of solar energy, by connecting the continents via superconductivity cables, we could power the entire world. The day side would light the night.
Superconductivity.
I don't hear people talk about that.
Superconductivity cables. That sounds like a Jenny Heinzen question because you're an electrician.
When you get a material that will pass electricity without any resistance.
Okay. So, Jenny Heinzen, is this anything you want to say about that?
I know what superconductors are. I've read about them. We aren't currently using them in about anything. There's a lot of temperature restrictions and things like that. I'm honestly probably not the best person to ask. I'm sorry. I don't know much about superconductors.
Sounds like a good thing to go out and Google, and you could probably spend an afternoon learning about what Bob is talking about there. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Mike from Avalon, New Jersey. Mike, you're on Radio Times.
Hello, everyone. If it makes sense to invest in solar panels on individual homes that I think of as rather randomly selected locations, maybe not in the best locations in small scale, why are there not more companies making larger investments in more rural areas where they can scale up and better locate these things
and
selling energy back?
Lee Kasheshi in Solar City, you don't do just residential. I think you also do some commercial applications, right?
We do. It's about a 50-50 split of our overall kW that we install. And you know, it's a good question. I think that there is really a place for both. Idea of putting solar out in a large area far, far away from a population has one negative aspect, which is it's got to be able to tie back to where the people are. So that is more of the traditional utility scale model, which has some of those limitations of transmission. Certainly that is happening across the entire country. You are seeing projects go up, large and medium-sized ground mount fields. But you know what we're finding, as well as attacking that market, is obviously there's a lot of interest in residential solar and making a difference really one rooftop at a time. I think there's much more of an impact on a community level as people start to see what this means and how it applies to them specifically, and as it expands from neighbor to neighbor.
All right. And let's go. We have an email from Mick, and Mick asks, when considering a purchase, when considering whether to install solar panels on a house, what are some of the key questions that you should ask a solar panel provider or an installer? What are some of the key questions that you would ask? Let's go first to John Farrell. What's maybe one or two questions that you think is really important to ask an installer?
That's a great question, because I am somebody who has actually been looking at putting solar on my own roof, and
okay.
So thinking of a lot of those questions. But I think looking for making sure that person is properly licensed and is someone who has got experience doing this, asking them what they've done before. I mean, there are a lot of questions that are frankly the same ones you ask any contractor. I think the ones that might be special to solar would be that you want to know how much energy is this going to produce and how much money am I going to save. And, do you offer any kind of guarantee about that energy production? Obviously, that's where everything really hinges on, is that, this investment that you make hinges on how much electricity that's actually going to produce. And so you want to be sure that your contractor has, properly measured the solar resource on your roof and has a good understanding of how much energy they think that you're going to get over the time of those panels.
And Jenny, any questions that you can think of on top of what John is suggesting there?
Yeah, he nailed it. Absolutely. That's what you need to do, what we call a site assessment, a shade analysis, making sure, and someone brought it up earlier, to see if there are, you know, trees or power lines or exhaust pipes or anything that might get in the way of shading your array. And sometimes people don't fully realize, but the way that these modules are often connected together in this large, you know, series string, just like having one bad bulb in the string of lights, one bulb goes out, they all go out, kind of a scenario. The same is true with shading. Or can be true with shading and solar power. So definitely a good site assessment by someone who is experienced. There is also, it's not required that installers be certified through an organization called NAPCEP, the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners. In some states, if a customer wants to be eligible for the incentives, that installer would need to be like NAPCEP, N-A-B-C-E-P. Other states, not. You know, it goes back to, you know, knowing your local township and jurisdictions and things like that.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. We're getting lots of calls in. We have Mike in Lansdowne, Pennsylvania. Mike, you're on Radio Times.
Hi there. My question is around the cost-benefit, which you started on. We talked with an installer a couple of years ago. I live in Pennsylvania, and we were sort of expecting, well, in order for the panels to be cost-effective for us, we needed to be able to sell, like, sort of credits for generating clean energy on a marketplace in Pennsylvania that no longer exists. It's my understanding, and so we didn't do it. We didn't, you know, move forward because it's not cost effective. Are there plans in the Pennsylvania legislature or other places to, encourage this kind of development?
Sure. Let's go to Lee from Solar City, and I know that you experienced kind of the problems with that market, right?
Sure. No, I've seen the ups and downs of the Pennsylvania market. I owned a solar company that was acquired by Solar City back in 2011, which was right around the time that the solar renewable energy credit market, or SRECs as they're called, started to see signs of oversupply. Essentially, there's a renewable portfolio standard, or quota, if you will, that's put on by the Public Service Commission to try and encourage renewable energy development. Mm-hmm. And there was such a demand for solar, and the incentives were so great that there was a huge rush for the installation of solar that over met the standard that was put in place. Solar City, after acquiring my company, decided at that point, you know, let's regroup, let's see how we can make the economics work. And over the last 2 years, really what we've been doing is driving our costs of installation down, both through the hard costs of panel costs that we talked earlier, and our ability to really develop some novel ways of both installation and the materials associated with installation. That we have re-entered the Pennsylvania market in just the last few weeks.
And do you have a sense that there are going to be some of those incentives from the past returning in Pennsylvania then?
So they technically never went away, but to the caller's point, they essentially went away from an economic sense. The way, again, that we operate at Solar City, we do sell systems, and we have a new program called MyPower, which is essentially a way to finance the system. It looks similar to how we do the lease of the power purchase agreement, but in the end, the homeowner does own the system, so they get some of the local benefits. But for the most part, what we do is we take on that risk of the solar renewable energy credits or any incentives that the state has, and we model it over our large portfolio. And so it allows us to go into a place like Pennsylvania with our lower cost of acquisition and our lower installation costs and feel like we can make it work. We're obviously working and hoping that some of the programs that have not been readjusted to the market potential do so. I know there's work right now in Harrisburg in that regard, and I'm not on the government affairs side, so I don't know too much about it. But I know we made the decision, recently to re-enter the Pennsylvania market.
Okay,
and I feel like there's people just like that who we can go to hopefully get them to go solar with us.
Sure. We received a question from Dan in Chadsford. He says, with a full-sized system, I think, I'm not sure exactly what that means because systems can be different size, but would you be able to power a full house? Let's go to Jenny with that question. Would you be able to put enough solar panels on your house to power a whole house?
Absolutely. And again, it just goes down to looking at what it is that you normally use. How much you use is going to determine how big of an array that you would need. And so obviously, the more energy efficient you are, the more you can train yourself and your family and your loved ones to turn off the lights when they leave the room, you know, the less you use, the less you have to make. So the smarter you are about your electricity, the smaller the size would be, and then ultimately the cost would be down. So efficiency first, definitely. And after that, all things are possible. Depending on your square footage, again, you could do a ground mount in the backyard. It really is customer specific to their needs.
Yeah, it's going to depend on your specific situation. I know where I live, I couldn't really do solar panels because I don't have enough sun in my neighborhood. There are too many trees. So you really need to have someone look at where you live. One of the issues that Dan brought up is selling power back to the utility. And John Farrell from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, that's an issue, this net metering issue of selling electricity back to the utility. We just have 45 seconds or so here, but just kind of explain that issue as in a nugget way so that we understand it, if you could.
If I succeed, I might be the first person to
you
do
might
it in 45
be.
Seconds.
it might be unfair to you. But.
Net metering is this policy that says essentially I can turn my meter backwards when that solar energy is being produced, and the meter then rolls forward normally when I'm consuming electricity. And the crux of it is that it's an accounting scheme to encourage people to offset their own energy use. That is available from utilities in 45 states. It's a point of contention. I won't get into that, but it is the policy that lets you, so you don't actually power your whole house because obviously at nighttime you need power from the grid, but it is the policy that allows you to help reduce your energy bill by having that solar on your roof and by contributing that energy to the grid as well as to use it in your own home.
Right, and we have state legislatures all over the country duking it out over exactly what net metering is going to look like. We are talking about renewable energy and specifically solar panels and what it takes to put them on your house. My guest, that's John Farrell right there. He's with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We also have on the telephone Lee Kasheshian. He is a regional vice president of East Coast Operations at Solar City. And Jenny Heinzen is the training coordinator for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, Wisconsin. They have a lot of knowledge, and we have a lot of calls that we are going to take in the next segment of the program. A lot of interesting questions. Stay tuned, and our guests will answer them. This is Radio Times. I'm Jeff Brady in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about solar energy and putting solar panels on your house. And one thing that I think is interesting is that I was looking at the website for the Solar Energy Industries Association, and they say that the average prices are down 63% since 2010 for solar panels. And we have somebody on the telephone who has a question related to that declining cost for solar panels. Let's go to Wade. Wade is in Northeast Philly, and Wade, you're on Radio Times.
Hey, how y'all?
Good. What's your question?
That was connected to that, but it was also connected to, you know, I do a lot of research just looking online and stuff. It seems like there's breakthroughs in solar technologies on an ongoing basis, and I just wonder, is it turning over or advancing that quickly that, you know, when is a consumer to maybe install a system with the best technology that's going to be there for a period of time that you're not looking at 2 or 3 years down the road, that it, not that it'd be obsolete, but inefficient?
Oh, sure. That's a big question. And I think let's turn to Lee Kasheshian from Solar City. So how do you address that question when people say, well, the technology is advancing and the prices are coming down so fast, yeah, why should I do it now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, two things. One is, for sure, technology is advancing, but what one has to look at is the efficacy, you know, the cost per watt. And if you can sign up today and start saving money today, why wouldn't you? The idea that something is going to be, you know, better 5, 10, 15 years down the road, you know, you can address that at that point in time. But most people, when they look at that decision, they ultimately decide, one, I'm not really going to shop for my technology with SolarCity. I'm really looking at how can I start saving money today. And we find most people who sign up with us, their next question is, how fast can you get it installed? So the once the person has made that decision that this makes sense for them and they can start saving money based upon the program that we put in front of them with the, you know, the guarantees that we put on our production and our costs, you know, it's a pretty compelling argument, which is, you know, how we've been able to grow so fast.
Yeah, and Jenny Heinzen from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, I guess it's not just the cost issue, too. I mean, there are environmental reasons to put these on your house.
Oh, absolutely. And if you don't mind, I would just like to add on to what was, you know, said in the last question, too, that the technology with the PV panels really, I mean, they've been, someone mentioned earlier, we have like 250-watt panels instead of 200 for the same square footage. But the technology of the modules themselves, there really aren't any major breakthroughs going on. So you don't need to worry about the modules, you know, like becoming inefficient over time. They only degrade about 0.5% per year. So if you have, and these systems will last decades, 30 years, and they'll still be making 85% of what they made on day one. You know, so there's that to keep in mind.
Sure.
With all this, you don't have to worry about necessarily becoming obsolete as soon as you put it in. What has improved since the last generation of solar is actually the electronics. We were talking about the inverters.
Sure.
The inverters that changed the DC into AC were not nearly as efficient as they are today. Today you're looking at between 95-98% efficient inverters. So I would not worry at all about putting in a system and worrying about it being obsolete. I don't think that's a concern to have at all.
All right, let's go back. We have a lot of people to answer calls, to answer questions from. So let's go back to the telephone, and we have Josh from Conshohocken. Josh, you're on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks very much for taking my call. My question is solar energy the kind of thing where the homeowner has to be either 100% all in or 100% out? Or is it possible to try it out maybe on a smaller scale in your home to perhaps power some of your less energy efficient appliances, and then if you like it, scale up to do more of your house? Is that doable economically and technically?
Okay, so let's go Lee from SolarCity. Is that possible? Can you kind of start out small and build on that, or do you really need to do it all at once?
No, well, so I guess the first idea to think about is the grade connection that we have. Through net metering, one of the ways that this all works, you know, as John was touching upon, is the ability to tie to the grid. So we have grid-tied systems. So the system sizing, you know, if you're worried about from a budget standpoint, that's one thing. But the reality of it is the system is being tied to the grid. You're still having power ultimately tied to the utility program. So that production that instead of going for 50, 100%, you do a smaller system at 20%, 5%, what have you, based upon the economics that you're working with, that's completely fine. And at later days, you can add more panels, maybe upgrade your inverter to be able to go closer to, you know, percentage-wise of your annual consumption. But because you're grid-tied, you're really still connected to the grid. And, of course, there are off-grid systems you tend to see in more rural locations, but that's not something that we install.
Right. We received a question from Sharon in New Jersey, or an observation, really. She talked about that her neighbor installed solar panels, and it creates a blinding glare into her home, and there's not really a lot that can be done about it. It's the township doesn't really have rules about that sort of thing. Has anyone here on our panel heard about a situation like that before? I don't think so, but there's something to look out for. I mean, I guess when you're introducing a new business, things are going to pop up that haven't popped up in the past. Let's go back to the telephone, and we have Marjorie from New Jersey. Marjorie, you are on Radio Times. Marjorie.
Hi there.
Hello.
So I'm a homeowner in New Jersey. We installed our home solar system on our southern-facing roof in 2006. When the state of New Jersey had a program to reimburse homeowners upwards of 40 to 45% of the cost of the installation.
Okay.
And our project was expensive. It was a big roof, big house, maybe $50,000 project.
Mm.
We're very happy we did it. We're saving money on our electricity. but the installation and the equipment was not without problems. So I have some advice for homeowners who are considering purchasing a home solar system. You talked a little bit about that earlier. I think it's really important to find out how long the company has been in business. There are no guarantees that the company stay in business. And there's a very high turnover in this industry. I would find out about the warranties on the inverters and the panels. At the time we bought our inverters, they were only 5-year warranties. Now I believe they're 10. And I know the technologies of those inverters has really improved, but we had many failed inverters. We have 3 inverters in our system, and we've had to replace each one of them at our own expense. I would also ask who they use to install the system. Often companies subcontract this work to other installers who are not trained
to do
the work.
Let's get this.
We had roofs, holes in our roof. And the companies really didn't do anything about that because then they went out of business.
Oh, well, that's sounds like a terrible situation. John, let's have you answer some of those questions. You're thinking about installing solar panels on your house. So what are you doing to sort of vet the company that you're going to choose? And are you looking at warranties and things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, that's all part of the questions. You know, the nice thing about a lot of these situations is that, and it was alluded to earlier, is that because there are often state or utility incentives, sometimes there are requirements about the kinds of installers that you can have that have to meet certain qualifications, whether it's a certification or whatnot. You know, I think asking those questions about warranties and whatnot is very important, and particularly, you know, whether or not those companies have been around for a while. There's, you know, it is an industry that's undergoing a lot of change because it's growing so quickly, and so that is something to keep in mind. But you know, the good news is that you know, as was said before, the technology has you know, has been around a long time, and it's evolved a lot to be very stable and reliable. And the inverters, for example, are getting much, much more efficient and reliable as well, and lasting longer. And so I don't find myself too concerned about that as somebody who's looking at getting solar. I think it's something to be careful about and to do your research. But I think that those issues are surmountable. And you know, unfortunately, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to have the perfect experience. You know, things can go wrong.
We're kind of focused on solar panels here, but we received an email from Paula who says, how do solar panels affect the warranty on your roof? So what's under the solar panels? And does the age of the roof affect the ability to install solar panels? Lee, let's go to you for that question. Lee,
sure.
From Solar City.
So the quality of the shingle, you know, the age of the shingle are all things that we determine in our site audit. So after a system is sold, we have a person basically gets up on the roof and checks out the quality of the roof, where all the vent pipes, the shading. We do the shading analysis, you know, which Jenny was alluding to. And in that point, we determine what the situation is with the roof. And in many cases, you know, the roof is fine, even if it's through its half life. But there are those situations where we will, you know, tell the homeowner that we have a problem, and we'll help them maybe find a roofer or work with them towards getting that mounting plane up to snuff. But if there is, you know, going down the road, if there are issues, two things. One is, you know, again, the reputation and the quality of the company that's doing the work is important. We have warranties around any penetration that we provide or perform. So, you know, it's not really something that we are worried about. It's something that we address when those unforeseen things may occur.
And how does it affect the life of the roof? Does it? I mean, you don't have the sun beating down on those shingles. Does it actually? Can it extend the life of the roof?
You know, it can. I mean, really, one of the main detractors of a roof or the thing that ages it is the UV rays. So that portion of a roof that's covered by the array is not getting hit by those rays. So, you know, I don't know if the industry has come out specific. Maybe Jenny would know more from a research standpoint. But the overall efficacy of that area of roof is improved.
So, Jenny, do you know how it affects the roof having solar panels up there?
Well, I'm not sure about, well, I mean, of course, it was mentioned earlier, you have to make sure that the roof is strong enough, you know, not only sure. that how old the shingles are, but also the structure, the structural integrity of the building itself. It should not, you know, affect the integrity of the roof at all. What I would do personally before putting in any sort of PV modules on a rooftop is getting the roof work. If you have any improvements to do, like if you've kind of been meeting to get the roof done, if you already got a few layers of shingles up there, maybe now is the time to make that investment and do it, because once the modules are up, if you want to do any roof work, they would, of course, have to come down. And you want to avoid that. So get make sure you're putting in a good roof first. And also want to mention that it's not really normal industry best practice anymore to make, like, holes and penetrations all over the roof anymore. That was done with gaskets and caulking. And as your caller mentioned, you know, that's a lot of times it doesn't work out all that well. So the industry has recognized this, and we use ballasted systems and systems that can kind of be shivved underneath the roofing shingles. But, no, it wouldn't adversely affect the roof in any way, shape, or form.
And what about once you install solar panels, maintaining them? Does that require a lot of work, Jenny?
That's probably the best thing about solar panel, is that it's a maintenance-free system. It is, you know, other than, you know, maybe if something went electrically wrong with the inverter or something where you had to bring the installer back out or change it yourself, these are maintenance-free. And speaking as an electrician and someone who actually does more wind power than solar power, that's amazing that you can just kind of plug it in and forget about it. So that's probably one of the best-selling standpoints of solar power, that it's maintenance-free.
Yeah, and for those of us who have a house, we think about solar panels. Is there a way to do wind at a house?
That's way more of a niche market, and like you would have to do a solar site assessment and see where your sun is hitting and where the roofs are and stuff. We have to do this. It's not for a city, really. It's for good, you know, rural customers that have a good location. But wind isn't something that we'd want to see used in the city, no.
And John Farrell, we should talk a little bit about some of the incentives, because there is a big one out there right now, a federal incentive, a tax credit of 30% of the cost of the system. But that is set to expire here at the end of 2016. Is it looking like if you want to act, you need to act?
Well, certainly acting now and acting in the next year is very important, because that is a substantial discount. I do have to say, though, that I'm also very optimistic that that as solar becomes more and more mainstream, that, you know, companies like SolarCity and other folks out there will continue to drive down the cost and make it easier to do solar. And, for example, by driving down the cost of borrowing money to install solar. So, like, you can get a car loan for, like, 3% interest. When we can do solar at 3% interest, I think that it's not going to matter so much that you have a tax credit or not.
And those tax credits important to your folks when they go out at SolarCity and talk to customers, I assume, Lee?
Yeah, it's part of the overall conversation. But again, because we're taking on all of the tax credits, incentives, SRECs, and we're putting it into our program with a price per watt that the homeowner is seeing, they're not having to deal with the back end of it. I think, as John pointed out, that is a big thing for us. We are doing everything we can to figure out how we can drive the overall costs, the hard costs and the soft costs, and financing is a big part of it. I think as we go forward here, we hope to get to a place where we can continue to operate, without these incentives from the federal government. And that's really by us continuing to grow and getting to scale and proving to Wall Street that we can do this effectively.
And about 20 seconds left here, Lee, but how do you see the future of since you're in the business and you're out there thinking about the finances every day, how do you see the future of this industry?
You know, it's been an amazing ride. We are growing so fast. We are hiring pretty much, a couple hundred people every week. So if somebody's looking for a job in this industry, there's tremendous opportunity with SolarCity, so they can go to our website and look at the career page. And I think that really bodes for what this is about. It's a transformational industry.
Thank you. That's Lee Kashashian. He's the Regional Vice President of East Coast Operations at SolarCity. We also had on the phone Jenny Heinzman, Training Coordinator for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, and John Farrell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. Thank you all for being here. If you'd like to learn more about this program, go to whyy.org/radiotime. Times. You'll find links to our Twitter handle. Our Facebook feed is there, and there's information on podcasts. The engineer today is Kevin Griffin. The producers of Radio Times are Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Jeff Brady, filling in for Marty Moskowain.